We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Luck and hope are not a strategy or a plan. We have to plan for what the reality is on that day, and we will. And I'm confident. I think we've done a really good job in terms of drafting the last couple of years at seven. There's always value. Can't talk about the kids, but we all know what's out there. And whoever gets lucky is going to be better off.
Middays on the Score.
Well, you said luck's not a plan, and then apparently it's the plan. The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves have clinched their third straight Central Division title. Be there Saturday and Sunday for the final regular season game. Saturday is First Responder Night, presented by Turtle Wax. For tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Darnell Mayberry is on Twitter, at Darnell Mayberry. He's been covering the Bulls brilliantly for The Athletic Chicago, and he joins us now in the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Hello, Darnell.
Hey guys, how you guys doing today?
Bad,
hanging in.
Bad.
They're extending Jim Boylan. What the hell, man?
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things that doesn't really make a lot of sense to bring him back if you don't extend him. So I think it beats the alternative of having a lame duck coach. But at the same time, we've seen no evidence that. Without a shadow of a doubt, proves to us that he is the main guy for the best guy for the job, or the right guy for the job. So, it's a tricky situation that they're in. But they put themselves in this position by firing Fred Hoiberg on December 3rd. We can't forget that.
It seems it's just crazy that they have found their guy without a real coaching search as often as they have. It's almost impossible to find the right guy without doing a search the way every other NBA team does.
And I think the difference is these guys are so connected personally in the front office and, mm-hmm. and ownership. I mean, the relationships go back years and years, and it's just really thick. And I think it's hard to comb through that. And people, they go with who they know, they go with who they trust. And you're seeing that in the Bulls organization probably more than any other NBA franchise. And, maybe it works. Maybe they land this number one pick and get Zion Williamson, or even a second pick and get Ja Morant, and maybe it doesn't matter because talent trumps all. But, it definitely looks like they could use some new voices, some new blood, and new direction.
I am so glad you said that. It is an insularity. It is the incestuous nature of the way they have just had this sort of sclerotic group of people in these darkened hallways together. And I said the same thing in the last segment. Why not get some oxygen, some sunlight, some best practices, throw the doors open, take a Theo Epstein approach where he said, we don't know anything. What can we learn? What can we find out? Bring some people through. I used to rip on the Bears for the same things. The Bears had these same hallways like this, like a convent. And then eventually everything got opened up a little bit and they picked up the phone. They talked to people. They didn't assume that everybody in that room always knew what was best. And that's why it's like they're playing in a different league sometimes, Darnell.
Yeah, and the thing is, everybody around here wants to fire guard packs. And, that's the buzz phrase. But I don't even think that people need to be fired necessarily. I think you can just reassign people. And there was a great question I think Joe Cowley asked yesterday at the press conference. Why not just reassign Gar Foreman? If he's unfit to be the general manager, if he's a really good scout, then just let him be a really good scout, if that's the case. I think the same could apply with a lot of people in the management positions over at the Bulls organization. Bring in some people who, like you said, are new blood, maybe have a different vision on things and a different skill set. People who have managed before, I mean, that's a big problem in the Bulls organization. You got a lot of people running things who have never really managed people before. And I think that trickles down in terms of the culture and forming what you see on the outside looking in of the organization.
Seems as though Jim Boylan's relationship with Zach LaVine did improve from day one to yesterday. I could only improve, perhaps, but is it meaningful enough? Did it improve enough from your perspective for a player like that and a head coach like that to get together and work together?
I think it improved enough for them to close out the season on a good note and move past some of the embarrassment that happened early in the season. Now, the Bulls still aren't a winning team, and that is what ultimately is going to matter and affect that relationship. If they come back next season and they get off to a good start and things look like they're going in the right direction, I could see that relationship blossoming. Both guys, I mean, they want the same thing. Jim Boylan's a competitor, and he wants to win. Zach LaVine is a big competitor, and he wants to win. And he wants to, you know, look good while doing it individually, of course, like every other player. And I think that there's the confusion there is how they do that. I mean, I talked to Chris Dunn. I'm going to write something on Athletic. Chris Dunn really kind of threw Jim Boylan under the bus on the day before the end of the regular season, talking about his multi-ball handler system and how it just doesn't fit him. So while we're all wondering what's going on with Chris Dunn, Chris Dunn is basically saying the new coach came in and put me in a system where I didn't really feel like I could thrive. I think Zach LaVine feels like that at times, too. As much as Zach has the ball in his hands, we even heard, John Paxson told us that they don't want the ball in Zach's hands as much. They want him to be more like a Klay Thompson guy. He's filling the lanes and finishing plays in transition, coming off screens and serving as a catch-and-shoot type guy. So I think they've got different plans for these players, and the players may see the plan for themselves. And I think that's where the big tension comes in when it comes to the relationship between Boylan and the players.
Well, my read on the thing with LaVine is he was smart enough to realize that he didn't want to develop the reputation as a pouter or at this stage of his career as you know, coach killer, somebody difficult to get along with. I think it seems like most of these guys are nice guys and professionals. We know it about Markkanen, and we know it about Porter, and they've put together a team of guys who are able to say, look, it's just not worth it. I think Zach LaVine realized it wasn't worth it to have a public feud with his coach at this stage of his career, and whoever talked to him said, look, you know, just do what's being asked of you. The problem I have is it's another one of these teams, Darnell. It's another John Paxson-envisioned Bulls team of nice, coachable, professional young men, the beloved core, this whole thing, and they're going to outwork people. How many times do we have to see this, and why can't you do something else?
I got a suggestion. I think it's time that we all just maybe tweak our expectations a little bit, you know, because it's always championship or bust with sports fans, with media, and I get that. I get that to a degree, and I subscribe to that. But I just don't know that the Bulls are subscribing to it. And if that's not what they're about, then we should change our expectations. If they want a 50-win team that, you know, makes it to the playoffs and maybe even makes a second round or a conference final every other year or every so often, and they're happy with that, then that's the expectation. If they're not about trying to build a championship-caliber team, then we can't hold them to that level of expectation. And I just don't know if that's where they are right now.
Well, regardless of expectation, though, theirs or otherwise, I mean, a question has to be asked about whether or not Jim Boylan's philosophies and schematics and just basic X's and O's, whether those have been filtered through John Paxson or Doug Collins, or whether they've been adjusted by them, or whether or not there's tension in what he prefers to do on the court versus what the front office would kind of prefer or these players would prefer to do, yeah?
Yeah, I do think that, I mean, in that question sort of was asked the other day, not if his strategies and philosophies are filtered through the front office and Doug Collins, things like that, but, you know, what are his philosophies and how does the front office feel about what he's bringing as a head coach philosophically and strategically on the court? And that is a big question mark continuing to go into next season. But I'm trying to look at both sides. If I'm Jim Boylan, I say most of my players missed the second half of the season. I'm going out there with Shaq Harrison and Ryan Arcidiacono. So it doesn't matter what schemes he uses, it's not going to work when you're that overmatched. So I think he does need a shot to come in next season and see, you know, what he can do from the start of next season and see if he can get this thing off the ground. Now, if he doesn't and they've extended them, they've put themselves in a corner, which is why the extension at this time even though you don't want a lame duck coach, it just doesn't make a lot of sense bringing him back to a long-term deal.
Yeah, I know what you're saying about recalibrating our expectations, but they've got the trophies in that building. They point to the trophies in that building. And they say one thing, but you're telling me that I don't know what I'm doing if the goal of this thing, if they're not trying to chart a path back to absolute top of the league relevancy. I understand they make a lot of money. I understand they're an incredibly well-run business, and they put out a great nightly entertainment product. But if that's what you're trying to do, just somebody's got to be straight with me and just be honest with me about that.
Well, I'll say two things. One, you point to those six trophies because it's a marketing tool, and it gets people from all over the world coming here to see a piece of history. And so you can't fault them for that, but that doesn't mean that they're still aligned with that vision and trying to get that. But the second thing is you can only get there by taking steps. You can't go from 22 wins to 62 wins. I mean, you've got to at some point become a relevant team again, like John Paxson said yesterday, but a competitive team again. And in order to become a championship, you must first become a competitive team. And, you know, they're taking the steps. They've got pieces in place. We all know about the core guys right now and you know, who looks promising and who doesn't at this point. And they're off to a solid start from a roster construction standpoint. But how you take that next step is then where the biggest question comes in. And the answer is maybe they don't, you know, maybe they don't know. Maybe they don't want to, or maybe they're just not ready. But they do feel like they're taking the first step to become a competitive team.
One name that's been thrown around quite a bit in the last 24 has been Patrick Beverley. Does that make as much sense as everyone seems to think it does?
I think so. You know, he gets you to, you know, 40-some-odd wins. He doesn't help you get to 50 or 60 wins. He doesn't help you, you know, not this team at least, compete for a championship. But he makes you competitive, and that's the biggest thing. These guys, you know, we were looking at some numbers the other day, 6-23 at home under Jim Boylan. They lost by 11.1 points per game at home. You know, so this team is a long way away from being just even competitive every night, and that's what they need to start with. And Patrick Beverley does that for you.
But what does Jim Boylan do well? What is a single aspect of the job of NBA head coach that he is better at than anybody else?
I don't know. When you put it that way, I mean, I can't say that he's better at one thing than every other, you know, the 29 other head coaches. But he does some very good things that I think this team could benefit from, and that's focusing on fundamentals, improving and drilling basics, and making sure these young guys have a foundation from which to work and really develop and blossom into the players that they can be. He's a really good communicator. You know, he comes off as a taskmaster, but I don't really think he is that. I think he is more of a, I don't want to say player's coach, because he's not that, I don't think, but because he's so demanding. But he'll wrap his arm around guys and pat them on the butt, tell them he loves them, and, you know, he goes over the top in terms of that type of stuff. But he really does genuinely care about these guys and wants to see them grow and get better. And I think when you have someone who shows players that are this young at this stage of their careers that he really is all about them, then I think players buy in. Have they bought in? I think a lot of them have. And they believe that his level or his style of coaching can help them. And we saw some good stretches last season. It wasn't a total failure, but overall it was. But we did see some good stretches out of some young players, and we did see some development. So I think you do have to give Jim Boylan a little bit of credit in that regard.
All right, if I'm Patrick Beverley, make the pitch to me. Why do I want to come to the Bulls?
Opportunity. You know, they want to improve the starting point guard position. They said that. Chris Dunn hasn't proven himself as the starting point guard for this franchise going forward. So there's a starting role out there in his hometown. You know, he can get major minutes. They've got $20 million of cap space, and money always talks for these guys and for all of us, really. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons why Patrick Beverley could come on and see that he could be building something special in his hometown. So is he interested in that? I don't know. I don't know Pat, but there are reasons to believe he might want to be here. A guy like him might want to be here.
But he's 30. You know, this guy's in July is going to be 31. You know, if he starts thinking about what he wants out of his career, it's not like he's 24. You know, this is a time where some guys are thinking about championships and legacy and competing for things too, right?
Yeah, but if the Bulls come to him and offer him $2, $3 million more than sure. the next highest offering team, you know, that may be an offer he can't refuse. And at the same time, you also got to realize that these guys don't look at themselves as going to someone somewhere or someone's team and the team still being bad. They have confidence in themselves. If Pat Beverly decides he's going to come to Chicago, he's going to have confidence that he can help turn this thing around, and they're no longer going to be a 22-win team. So, you know, it's a good question, and it is going to be interesting to see which one of these free agents they target. It's not great out there after the marquee guys, which we know they're not going to get. So I'm really curious to see how they're going to spend this money, because they made it sound like they're definitely spending it. You just hope it's not on another Jabari Parker.
One of the other things I was kind of surprised by in that press conference was John Paxson's pointed challenge to Lauri Markkanen about getting better in this offseason, getting better next year. Was that an opportunity he could take because Lauri Markkanen can hear that and respond to it? Or is that an actual challenge given, like you say, free agency doesn't have, you know, top-tier guys that the Bulls are going to be into? It certainly has top-tier players, but the Bulls won't be there, and that their draft pick could be 5.
Yeah, I missed the question. I'm sorry.
As Paxson challenged Lauri Markkanen to get better and better, like it was very pointed, and I found it interesting that he took the opportunity to be as direct about Markkanen's need to improve as he was, considering he was as good as he was this year.
Yeah, it was a challenge, and it rubbed some of us the wrong way a little bit because he did kind of call him out. But, I mean, that's what you want. I mean, we talk about accountability all the time, and I just think just because the reputation of John Paxson and Gar Forman is so bad right now that anything they do just kind of comes off as negative or something that we could criticize. But he's right. Lauri Markkanen has a long way to go. He's not the player that he is capable of being just yet. And all of these guys need to develop. What I didn't like is that we heard so much put on the players and so little put on the coaching staff and the front office. You know, does Lauri Markkanen need to improve? Yeah, John Paxson didn't say anything that was inaccurate yesterday about Markkanen. But I'd also like to hear some other stuff and some accountability with the front office and the coaching staff.
Darnell, always great stuff. We really appreciate your insight. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That is Darnell Mayberry of The Athletic. We have the Midday Midway coming up. I have something scientists are doing that they need to stop doing. This is something that we know from the movies, and we know just ethically, don't do this. It will be bad. I also have kind of a rough night for a British comedian.
You've heard dress for the job you want, not the job you have. We have an extreme incident of that. And we've also got something dropping at the end of the show that I'm very excited about.
Is it my pants?
It might be. No. The Midday Midway. No, it's not your pants. No. Are you wearing pants?
Yeah.
Oh, well, kind of. That's new for you. Nominally. Midday Midway's next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1, 2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
I'm still livid about this news that the Bulls are apparently deciding to extend Jim Boylan for reasons obvious only to them.
Apparently.
And to no one else around the league, outside the league, or anywhere outside of these Bulls offices. Boylan has politicked his way into something here for some reason, and still no answers as to what he does well or why they want to have him around.
Do you want to keep searching for those?
I don't know.
I'd rather watch a little baseball this summer and kind of enjoy that and search for those answers. But if you want us, I mean, we can do that.
Also mentioned the University of Nevada has decided to sign Steve Alford to a 10-year contract because apparently they now want to be the place that affiliates themselves with an absolute scumbag of a human being and make sure that everybody hates them and resents them. So done and done.
So you've heard, dress for the job you want, not the job you've got. We had an extreme example of that just a little while ago with someone who's looking to get a job in the next couple of weeks. Ohio State quarterback Dwayne Haskins had a pre-draft visit with the Denver Broncos on Wednesday. And while these visits are you know, kind of perfunctory, but definitely interviews and a chance for 15 minutes of a player to get into somebody and figure out what everybody's about, this one was a little bit different. Haskins, who took a visit to the Pro Football Hall of Fame when he was like 7 years old and got hooked in the history of the league, right? I mean, he's really into all of the formation of it, the AFL, NFL, all that kind of stuff. And he is a huge John Elway fan. So Haskins, in his official visit to the Broncos, wore a John Elway jersey to the interview. I don't know how John Elway took that. I don't know. This is according to multiple reports. A number of people have reported this. SI Extra Mustard has the aggregate. And I got to tell you, with John Elway, who I'm not a huge fan of as an executive, you know, considering he just kind of misses on quarterbacks all the time, I don't know if that's the right way to appeal to a guy who's got a giant ego, or if you're going to walk in there with the Elway jersey on and he's going to go, "You'll never be me, get out." I'm kind of split.
I think it's probably a net positive.
Would take it. You think so?
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to overthink it too much. It reminds me of the time when Terry and I walked out of the studio back at NBC Tower and they were interviewing prospective producers. This guy showed up for his interview in a Jalen Rose jersey. I didn't know that would be designed to impress Drew Hayes, but that's how
it wasn't Mitch.
He showed up, unless you're actually, even if you are Jalen Rose.
Don't be the guy who wears the shirt of the band you're going to see. Don't be the guy who wears a jersey to an interview.
It's a job interview, man. Come on. This is from Vox.com. Scientists in China have created a new kind of monkey. Speaking of Terry, it has a human brain gene.
Oh, the brain monkey.
And that just might make its intelligence a little bit more like ours. That, in turn, makes its fate and its very existence very ethically fraught. In a study published last month in Beijing's National Science Review Journal, researchers took copies. The human MCPH1 gene, believed to play an important role in our brain development, and introduced it into monkey embryos by means of a virus that carried the gene. Of the 11 transgenic macaque monkeys they generated, 6 died. The 5 survivors went through a series of tests, including MRIs and memory tests. They didn't have bigger brains than a control group, but they did perform better on short-term memory tasks. Their brains also developed over a longer period of time, which is typical of human brains. This has been described as the first attempt to experimentally interrogate the genetic basis of human brain origin using a transgenic monkey model. The point of the study was to tackle a question about evolution. How did we humans develop our unique brand of intelligence, which has allowed us to innovate in ways other primates can't? So they're looking at this gene as the humanity switch, as the missing genetic link. What the hell are we doing here?
Get your stinking paws off me,
you damn dirty apes.
Now,
these aren't apes. These are monkeys. We know,
yeah, but I don't think Charlton Heston knew that.
We know that chimps and humans do share a recent ancestor, like 98% of DNA, but monkeys are not apes. According to this, the last time they shared an ancestor with us was 25 million years ago. Their genome is close to ours, but there's tens of millions of differences. And the other ethical question that the ethicists are asking is, if they become aware that they exist.
Yeah.
How can we keep them confined? How can we, if they know they then have lives to live in a different way and are conscious of the lives that they are living, who are we to keep them locked up in this way? This is such a bad thing.
It's a bad idea. Thankfully, Gene Roddenberry has answered those questions many times over in any handful of Star Trek episodes, right? I mean, haven't we as a sci-fi community answered that question? You let them go.
Mm-hmm. So they can wreak havoc upon you.
Well, sure, it'll be the end of civilization as you know it, but ethically speaking, that's the only decision you've got to make. Here's a decision you have to make. You can go to Hawaii. If I told you, I want to go to Hawaii, If I told you that you could have a $6 trip to Hawaii, would you go?
Is it the same Hawaii?
It's Hawaii. It's Hawaii. You have a $6, I can get you to Hawaii.
Am I in
the catch?
At the bottom of a ship?
No, the catch is you only get to stay there for 24 hours.
Oh.
Once the trip starts. The fine folks at Arby's are offering you just this choice. In coordination with its launch of a full lineup of King's Hawaiian sandwiches,
okay,
which are delicious, the restaurant chain is selling $6 round-trip tickets today, starting in 28 minutes and going through Monday. Those interested will have to hurry. It's first come, first serve. 10 slots each offer period, which I think is an hour.
So you sit in coach.
The approximate retail value of the prize, which includes round-trip tickets to and from LAX to Hawaii, as well as the Los Angeles hotel stay, is $2,700. The winners will be flown to Los Angeles International Airport and leave for a six-hour Hawaii getaway from there. Arby's has yet to pick the airline. The trip will be April 26th and April 28th. You will see nothing. You will do nothing. But you will get to eat the sandwiches somewhere in Hawaii. Are you in?
No.
Yeah, I don't
I'm
think
very
I'm
very much out.
$6, though. I mean, the opportunity, the cost there is just so low.
Very much out.
If you could have the day, though, maybe it's something to go to.
A little bit of news here. Victor Caratini, fractured left hammock bone, 4 to 6 weeks. Surgery Monday. Taylor Davis will be called up to replace him as the Cubs' backup catcher. So that's too bad. But not as bad as this. I want you to meet British comedian Ian Cognito. I assume it is a
what's up, man?
An adopted pseudonym. Hello, Ian Cognito. Well, he was performing at a club in Bicester, and he fell ill on stage. He was at the Attic Bar in Bicester on Thursday. This is yesterday. He is said to have sat on a chair and laid back for 5 minutes. An audience member told the BBC they thought his silence was part of the act, and they had continued to laugh, unaware that he'd fallen ill, because he apparently was a bit of an avant-garde comedian, and he would do some performance arty kind of things, you know, Andy Kaufman style, where he would challenge audience perceptions, he would push the boundaries of what was considered discomfort comedy in that kind of regard.
Sometimes you take a dive in front of people just to let them know that you're in on the joke. Sometimes it goes wrong, though. Sometimes you're down for the count in front of your bosses.
So he was, they thought his silence was part of the act, and they continued to laugh. And then the South Central Ambulance Service showed up and pronounced him dead.
Ooh. Ooh.
They talked to one person who attended the gig, this guy John Ostajak. He said the comic did a really good set.
Huh?
He said only 10 minutes before he sat down, he joked about having a stroke. He said, imagine having a stroke and waking up speaking Welsh. So when he sat down towards the end of his set, he said, we thought it was part of the act. We came out then feeling really sick. We just sat there for 5 minutes watching him and laughing at him.
Oh, no.
So,
no. That's horrible.
They eventually approached the stage and got someone to call an ambulance.
Oh.
Staff attempted to perform chest compressions and then asked the audience to leave.
Oh. They just left.
He died doing what he loved, slumping in a chair.
Oh. That's horrible.
Awesome.
By the way, same.
that's breaking a chair. That's different.
That's horrible.
Hey, that's how, I mean, he went out on stage and laughing. He got it. Think about that. If you're a comedian, you're literally, as you die, getting a big laugh.
You're supposed to knock them dead.
Oh, God.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Wolves have clinched their third straight Central Division title. Be there Saturday and Sunday for the final regular season game. Saturday is First Responder Night, presented by Turtle Wax. For tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com.
Yeah, one more. So what's happening this afternoon has been long awaited, even though it's been with some trepidation that we Star Wars fans have been waiting for it. At the convention going on here in town right now will be a live stream and release of the title of Star Wars Episode 9, plus the trailer. It comes out, I believe, at noon, or the stream starts in a little while, and it goes on for a bit, and then it Drop the trailer. I got to be honest, and you did the story yesterday. It made me think of doing this. That there has been like this unrest with Star Wars fans, and certainly like this racist undercurrent through some sci-fi that's been absolutely horrifying to watch happen. It's disgusting and it's gross, and it needs to end. But I didn't think I'd ever get to this point where I'm ready to take a break from new Star Wars movies. I'm good. I need this one. I need 9. It needs to happen. I want to resolve the Skywalker storyline. But apparently Kathleen Kennedy and the rest of the folks at Disney and whatnot are ready to take a break as well. They are going to pause the production of Star Wars movies after 9 comes out. Now, there's the live-action show that's going to be on the Disney streaming service from Jon Favreau. He's going to direct the thing. I'll probably end up watching that. There's the the Galaxy Far, Far Away, whatever, the actual live action like amusement park that they're building. So there's going to be plenty just inundating your lives. But I don't know how you feel if you're a Star Wars fan on this, but I'm kind of relieved that they're going to do 9 in December and then just take a little bit of a break.
But remember, nothing ever dies. Remember, anything people like is eventually going to be done and rebooted and reimagined into the ground and forever.
It'll make $900 billion.
Until they make you hate it. So you may have to step away for your own sanity at this point. That is the Midday Midway. Jonah Carey's going to talk baseball at 11 shortly after that. Brian Windhorst is going to talk about LeBron James, the book he has coming out. We'll talk NBA with him. So we're going to get very, very busy. Coming up, though, Bob Brenly might have stepped in it again last night.
He'll do that from time to
time. Yeah, I know he will. And he's got some get off my lawn in him at this point in his career. I'm a big fan of him and his work, but sometimes he gets a little unfortunate. And we can weigh in with a lot of the baseball stuff that's going on, too. We got Cubs.
There's a lot of news. Jose Quintana had a nice night. You had an afternoon game. We gave you the roster move to replace Victor Caratini. And we'll talk about Q's evening rebounding in a very big way for the Cubs. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
There goes Tatis one more time, and again, Hedges fouls it off. That time a fastball down the middle.
Might be easier to run the bases if he didn't have that bike chain around his neck. Got to weigh him down, doesn't it?
Nothing seems to. Half the pitches from Archie in this inning have been in this at bat.
Oh, Bob. It's just a piece of jewelry. It's okay. A lot of guys wear chains. A lot.
Tons.
It's just kind of what people do. It's okay.
And it's fine.
And they have for a long time.
Long time. I have
you
always
actually,
wanted, though.
You actually think Bob's against it, though?
I don't think so.
It was the 11th pitch of the at-bat, and they've been like basically making fun of the fact that Tatis had been going back and forth, and the chain was dangling the entire time. I think it was more just like, that's a big chain with all these pitches.
I think they were kind of goofing around about things, and he kind of, he's got a little, you're right, Bob does have a little bit of track record for a get-off-my-lawn kind of thing every now and again, but I didn't think that was all that malicious. I've always, with the big chain or like something with a pendant on it, or even the cross, when you go to slide, like if you slide head first, I've been, popped by a button or a belt buckle or something like that when you go down to slide. It hurts. It really takes the wind out of you.
You got to plan for these things.
I wouldn't be able to play with one of the things. I would not be able to play very well at all.
Especially in this day and age when once guys get on base, they re-outfit themselves with oven mitts. You can see so many people like, okay, I might be sliding.
Could be.
I have to have my special wrist brace. I have to have my giant oven mitt that they have. They make guys ready for the next phase of their professional responsibility, and then you've got a guy with like a piece of the true cross around his neck.
You would think it would hurt a little bit to come down on it. Meanwhile, they haven't changed. The bases are still made out of concrete, right? We haven't changed the structure of the bases at all. They're still made out of the very material that's designed to break human fingers. We're still doing that?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Somebody had argued for softer bags. I mean, for not just the bags on, not just spring-loaded idea of the bags having some give.
Spring-loaded.
Yeah.
Oh, like breakaway bags?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, but I had heard an argument for, and I don't think this is going to work unless they get it absolutely right and field test it, pillow. Like the old fashioned
used to be,
The old fashioned poofy bag. I think they're worried about spikes catching, and
you probably would catch, and you'd have to like tagging up and stuff. You might get a loose. Yeah,
there's got to be a better way to do it, though.
There is. There are,
or maybe almost like a dome rather than a biscuit the way they kind of have it now?
With the sharp, it's made out of a material that was designed to break fingers. I'm convinced of that. I don't know why you're doing that in that way. You're going to get the bigger bases. Remember, the Atlantic League is doing, in some of the changes, mm-hmm. they're adding, I think it was 3 total inches on either length or width or whatever. They're adding 3 inches on either side because it's not a perfect square. At least I don't think it's a perfect square. But they're adding size to the bag.
So what'd you like help. From Jose Quintana last night?
Throw more changeups, and I really enjoyed the pitch sequencing. I thought that was really well synced up. The fastballs away to right-handers seem to be a little bit of a struggle for him, at least late, but that fastball command is where Jose Quintana lives and eats. He had it last night. He made it work for him, and he sprinkled in some good off-speed stuff. I thought the curveball was a dandy. He had 11 strikeouts, and that was one of the best starts. It was the best start that you've seen all year from a Cubs starter. That was him in command.
I like the fact that the changeup makes his fastball seem faster. It changes the timing of how they have to respond. 92 looks closer to 94 if he is getting guys out on that front foot a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of what Kyle Hendricks ran into when he had some fits last season, is he wasn't getting those changeups to really drop, to really kind of power down. And that made guys just kind of turn it off. You're not looking for it anymore. You're fine. Now just up to hit this fastball, everything's going to be fine. We don't have to key in on any of the other secondary stuff. So having those 3 options like Q does when he's working like he did last night makes him a much more dangerous guy. It's still, though, you know, it's a staff that's going to live at the bottom of the strike zone. With the exception of Yu Darvish, if he's on top of things, you know, literally on top of his pitches and metaphorically on top of his stuff, that's a staff that's going to live at the bottom of the strike zone. And you see what heat maps look like, and guys hit low pitches now. They're keyed up for that kind of stuff. That's what they look for. That's something you're going to have to avoid. You have to avoid walks if you're going to give up home runs down at the bottom of the strike zone.
And we were watching Chris Bryant again struggle with off-speed stuff. Again, it just looks like he's not getting competitive swings on anything other than a fastball.
Yeah, I think he can be, I mean, obviously he can be a productive player and has been for about 2 years now without being great at hitting off-speed stuff. But when you get into, you know, funks like this, or where you're just being fed a steady diet, then you're kind of like, he hit one hard ball, you know, to Melky Cabrera. He made that crazy Melky Cabrera play where it looks like his legs are all of a sudden, he takes off and it looks like they're just stilts. Like he doesn't have knees. He just has to run with like 2 planks, 2 2-by-4s. And then he stumbles and makes that catch like he does. It's enjoyable to watch Melky Cabrera play the outfield. No. That's fun. Because he's capable, but he gets to baseballs unlike anybody I've seen. It's amazing to watch that happen.
A response from Stonecutter via the opinion that you just gave during the midway about being fed up with some of the frequency of Star Wars movies.
Not fed up, just kind of ready.
Well, what Stonecutter says, you know why you're worn out? There were 3 Star Wars movies in 32 years.
Right.
Between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, and there were 4 Star Wars movies in the 29 months from the release of The Force Awakens to Solo, A Star Wars Story.
That sounds right.
Right?
I didn't think any of them were all that bad.
No, I didn't either.
You know, I thought Solo was fine.
It's fun.
It was fun. It gave you the things that you wanted to see happen, and then they moved on with the story, and Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian was amazing.
It was great. It was perfectly worth my money, and it was more of an adventure movie than it was a sci-fi movie.
I have Rogue One as one of the top 3 Star Wars films. Thoroughly enjoyed that. I know that's not the common take, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. And then Last Jedi was, it was a fight, you know, to get through some of the stuff that they wanted to do with Luke and whatnot, but I'm there. I got there on it.
I think Rogue One had maybe the most sensitive portrayal of a droid in the entire Star Wars series.
Alan Tudyk is a legend.
He is.
He's an absolute legend.
Has he ever done anything that isn't awesome?
I don't think so.
He's great in
Tucker and Dale is hilarious.
He's great in A Knight's Tale.
Yep.
He's Pirate Steve from Dodgeball.
Serenity is his Wash in Serenity. He's amazing.
He is the boss in Knocked Up, right?
Oh, God, that's right. Tighter.
He's always awesome.
Yep.
And it was a K.
Oh, he's, and you know who else he is? K2SO. He's also, he does a spin in Arrested Development as Anne's, right? Anne's father, the preacher. Hilarious in that show.
Yeah, he's one of those guys.
Get you
that,
some real alcohol?
No God, matter. The Job wedding thing is so perfect.
It's great.
Bobby in Saginaw, Michigan, you're on the score. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
You are.
Hey, so Dan, you know, like you have shared the feeling of James Harden appreciating how good he is, but not aesthetically pleasing.
Correct.
I've been in that space with Chris Bryant. So I've always loved his production. I just don't really love watching him swing and the way he takes pitches. I've always understood that he's going to come with the production. And so this year with his slow start, and granted it's just a slow start, it's very early, but I'm starting to see things that actually do make me question on how productive he'll be. Just the hard fastballs up and the hard fastballs in. He looks caught off guard a little bit. I know going the opposite way has always been a huge part of his game, but it's starting to seem like you can attack him hard and in. I just plainly, from the point of view of the Cubs, their whole franchise, how important it is for him not to be good, but to be elite, you know, to be a top 10, top 20 player in the game. And he's got some work to do to get back there. So as the Cubs offense is looking pretty good with a lot of their players, you know, Contreras and Baez and Hayward, they need Chris Bryant to be great. And I'm starting to, even though I've always had, you know, I don't love watching his swing from a baseball standpoint, I always knew the numbers would be there. And I'm starting to see some things that make me somewhat skeptical on how great he'll produce this year. That's all I had for you.
That's all we need, Bobby. I think it's fair to have that kind of critical eye.
Yeah, I think the operative term here is greatness. I think he's right when you term it that way, when you expect the top and top tier level of production from that player, from Chris Bryant specifically. You do need that. I mean, looking back at last season, if you'd had just a couple extra weeks of Chris Bryant playing the way he did in the first six, you probably get your one extra game. That's a lot of what this team is based around.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves have clinched their third straight Central Division title. Be there Saturday and Sunday for the final regular season game. Saturday is First Responder Night, presented by Turtle Wax. For tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Looking forward to our weekly visit with Jonah Carey. We will talk baseball, go around the league, talk Cubs and Sox and things with him next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.